Under the Radar, bringing movies and people together, one frame at a time. Hey guys, I'm Randy Unger, and this is another episode of Under the Radar, bringing movies and people together, one frame at a time. And with me today, I have a wonderful person, a great critic, and his first time to the show, Mr. Rylan Kaiser. Rylan, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here, man. Thank you so much.
This is very exciting. This is like, yeah, I've been waiting for this moment for a while now because I've known you fairly recently. And, you know, we always chat movies, but we never do it on camera. So this is it's a very cool experience. I'm very excited for this.
Yes, this will be great. And I've also been looking forward to this for a couple months now. So.
Awesome. Awesome. So today we're going to dive deep into, my favorite actor's filmography, Mr. Tom Hanks. We're going to talk about two of his notable films. They're very different from one another, but they're very great. We're going to be discussing Forrest Gump, which now turns 30 years old. You're not even 30 years old, Rylan, but that's okay. So we're going to discuss that, and then we're going to segue into a lesser-known Hanks film, dark comedy from 1989, The Burbs. So that film is celebrating its 35th anniversary. So I'm very excited to talk about both. And so we've got a lot of movie to cover. So let's start with Forrest Gump, now 30 years old. I remember seeing this in theaters when I was a wee lad. I was about maybe 8 or 9, and my parents took me to go see it. It was just a lot of fun. Even at that young age, I kind of understood what was going on. I had a very emotional, it had a very emotional impact on my life. And it was just a really special film, very family friendly. And Hanks, you know, knocked it out of the park. He won the Oscar for that. It was his second Oscar. Back to back, he won the previous year for Philadelphia. So this was Hanks at his prime. And yeah, it's just a really wonderful film. It's an epic, I'd say, about a dim-witted man who basically experiences life to the fullest extent. And he is at the center of every notable American event from like the 50s up until the 80s. And it's just a really special film. But enough from me. New to the show, Rylan Kaiser. What were your thoughts on Forrest Gump?
I love Forrest Gump. It's been a while since I had seen it. And it's funny that you had mentioned you'd seen it when you were, you know, so much younger. I was also so much younger when I had seen it for the first time. And I didn't fully understand, I think, a lot of the elements. Even watching it back this other time, last night, there was this moment where, you know, they're at the hotel and he notices the flashlights, you know, completely went over my head the first time I had seen it when I was younger, because I didn't know what Watergate was. I had no idea. But, you know, now having some more historical, you know, context to these things, I was going, oh, OK, you know, he meets like 5-6 presidents. It's really quite a journey. I think what this movie does so well for me is it really feels as if this could be a biopic, as outlandish and movie-esque that this is. It really feels like a complete life that somebody lived. Right. And I don't think a lot of movies do that particularly. Well, I think it's challenging for a lot of movies to do that, especially when it comes to a fictional character like Forrest Gump. So I thought Tom Hanks was brilliant. I thought Robin Wright, brilliant. Doesn't get as much praise, I think, as she deserves for this role. She's fantastic as Jenny. Yeah. And just a great movie. Zemeckis knocks it out of the park. So yeah, it was a great watch again.
And I want to add on to that wonderful cast, phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Gary Sinise is just brilliant in this, and the use of special effects at the time were to make his legs not part of his body, just kind of an amputee. That was industrial light and magic that added like blue stockings on Gary Sinise so they could hide his legs. Beautifully done there. And this film did win best visual effects that year at the Oscars. and, you know, Zemeckis won director, the film won best picture. And also, we've got Mama, you know, played by Sally Field. Wonderful, wonderful.
Fantastic. There.
Yeah. So just like the performances are so strong in this, and, you know, it really, it stands the test of time. This movie is just a really beautiful story, and it does feel like a biopic. I definitely agree with you there. And Forrest is just drawn so wonderfully. I would say most of it is in part by the author of the Forrest Gump novel, Winston Groom, who created this character and created this world. And, you know, he never really gets a lot of praise, but I think he should. I believe he passed away, but he really crafted a wonderful story here. So I say this is perfect for the whole family. I mean, maybe not super young children can appreciate it.
Yeah. You know, when I saw watching it last night, when I pulled it up, I was reminded that it was PG-13, and I thought, oh, you know, that's a bit of a surprise. I feel like it. I guess before watching it, I thought, well, I could see this is rated R, and then after watching it, I thought, no, PG-13 is fine. Yeah. There's just some maybe heavier things that a younger audience might not fully have an appreciation or understanding for, especially coming from my own personal experience of having seen it when I was younger. Mm. But it's such a good movie. And for a nearly 2.5 hour movie, zooms by, really does.
I totally agree with you there. In a time where the standard runtime of a movie is about 2 hours, 2:15. And this is, yeah, about two and a half. It does breeze by. It's a lovely watch because you're so engrossed in the story and the characters and the visuals. There's so much to chew on here. And it really is a delightful viewing, especially on a Saturday or a Sunday afternoon, I'd say. It's just perfect for that type of environment. So, yeah, Forrest Gump. Love this movie. I have to watch this movie at least once a year. I mean, it's kind of a given. It's one of those.
And one of the best soundtracks, too. Right. Like just song after song, especially in those Vietnam sequences. It's all, you check all the boxes on them, you know? Yeah.
It's the soundtrack, which consists of like some of the most notable songs of the time period. Plus, I am a big film score geek. We've got Alan Silvestri, who delivers a powerhouse score here, who is a frequent collaborator with Zemeckis, you know, most notably, the Back to the Future trilogy and Castaway and the Polar Express, et cetera. His theme at the beginning of the film here with the feather floating through the sky, it's so perfect. It matches the visuals beautifully. And also the heroic running theme, which does make an appearance when Forrest is a young boy and his braces on his legs break off as he's running away from bullies. That's its first appearance. It also appears when Forrest is running in the college football game.
Mm.
And I think it's just so great. I love that theme.
I also love, you touched on the braces breaking scene. The special effects aged very well. I was curious to see how that held up. I was curious to see how the inserts from, you know, the historical time periods held up. I felt as if, you know, some of the dubs, I could tell a little bit with the, I think it was either Johnson or Nixon where they get quite a bit of dialogue, and I was like, okay, it looks a bit, you know, all right. But for the most part, I think it really holds up.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the meeting of the presidents, so well done. There's also a scene where he's on a talk show with Dick Cavett. And he meets John Lennon. That's brilliant. I mean, Industrial Light and Magic, they can do no wrong. They just did a fantastic job, you know, because up until this point, we would pretty much know ILM for like their creature effects, you know, like Jurassic Park and Terminator 2, Aliens. Actually, no, did they do Aliens? I don't know. But no, they did The Abyss. So basically, up until 1994, they were known for their like really science fiction-y creature effects. So this was like one of their first attempts at like kind of really contributing to a drama and not just a sci-fi adventure. And yeah, the scenes with the presidents were seamless. They looked brilliant. The dubbing might have been a little off, but hey, I think for the most part it worked.
What can you do?
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, Forrest Gump, this movie, it really stands the test of time. And those who are listening to this and who have not seen it, who are watching this and have not seen this beautiful, beautiful film, I don't know what kind of rock you've been living under. No, but this movie is quintessential American cinema at its best. And yeah, it deserved all the accolades that it got. Even if though it did beat Pulp Fiction that year for Best Picture. Both very different films, but both both great. So, but yeah, Forrest Gump, classic.
Timeless. Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful. Now, I wanted to just switch gears here a bit and go back a little bit further in time for our anniversary reviews for 1989's The Burbs, now celebrating its 35th anniversary. You know, this is one of my all-time favorite Tom Hanks movies. It's on my top 10 as well with Forrest Gump and of all-time films. And it's just a really strange, dark comedy that is hilarious and scary and exciting. And it's got a great cast, a great score. Basically, in a nutshell, those who have not seen it, I know as of yesterday, you had not seen this, Ryland, and I'm so happy that you got to experience. I want to hear your thoughts in just 1 minute. But you've got Tom Hanks as a mild-mannered family man. He lives in this quintessential suburban town, middle of America, and he basically suspects his next-door neighbors of foul play. He doesn't know what kind of foul play, what's going on. He just hears weird sounds in the night. He smells weird smells, and he basically joins forces with two of his other quirky, weird neighbors to try and investigate and find out what the heck is going on here. And the results are ridiculous. It's directed by Joe Dante, who's best known for the Gremlins movies, Inner Space, Small Soldiers, that sort of stuff. Also, a lot of small town adventures and dark comedies. And the score is by Jerry Goldsmith, who is one of my all-time favorites. And yeah, it's a great little film. It was released by Imagine Entertainment, which is Ron Howard and Brian Grazer's production company.
I didn't know that.
So I think this was one of their first films, by the way. Yeah. And it's just a fun little dark comedy. It's ridiculous. It's funny. And Ryland, I have not heard what you had to say in too much detail, but I am curious now. What did you think of The Burbs?
Yeah. Extremely fun. What a fun movie. I thought it was so great. It's such a nice self-contained story. I feel like movies like that don't really, a movie like that, I feel like hasn't come out in a very long time.
Right.
I guess for the phrasing of that. I really enjoyed it. I think it's a great ensemble piece. It's interesting how I loved the character that Corey Feldman played. I love Bruce Dern. He was amazing in that. It really felt like, and it aged pretty well too. I don't think that even though some of the effects are definitely of their time, I think in terms of the story, you could make that movie today and it could be, you know, fun and relevant and, you know, enjoyable.
I could see like James Franco and Seth Rogen doing something like this now.
You know, I thought I could see Walton Goggins being the Bruce Dern role and maybe Danny McBride as the neighbor, you know, something like that.
Cool. I like
the if they were choice. To do that again.
And I will be the Tom Hanks character because I'm obsessed with him.
Yes. I think it's great. I loved the twist at the end. Right. Because I thought at the very end, without spoiling it, I thought they did a great job of kind of taking you one direction and making you think one thing and then sort of taking you into the other direction and then taking you back into a different direction. especially in that, really within the last 10 minutes, you know, it just kind of all takes off.
I know.
It's so fun. And really, a funny concept. I grew up in the suburbs, and there are certain neighbors who are a bit more watchful than you would care for them to be. So great cast. Carrie Fisher also incredible in this. I it was great to see her in this role, and such a fun movie.
You can you can definitely tell that the entire cast is having a great time here, which I love. And this was 1989, so this was like a time when Tom Hanks, he wasn't really a leading dramatic actor yet. He had dabbled in some romantic stuff. He did two films out of Every Time We Say Goodbye and Nothing in Common, which were in the late 80s. But this was his like part of his quintessential comedic repertoire, if you will. He had just done, you know, Big, which he was nominated for an Oscar. I think this movie came out right when the nominations came out. And and everyone on set was like, "Oh, big shot, Mr. Hanks." So that was pretty. That must have been an interesting time for him. He was doing so many comedies during this time. Same year, he did Turner and Hooch. So basically, this was at the pinnacle. At the pinnacle time in his comedic career. But, you know, he's ridiculous in this. Rick Dockumann, who plays the heavyset neighbor, is great. Yes. You mentioned Bruce Dern and of course, Carrie Fisher. So, and I also want to mention a little bit of trivia here. The cul-de-sac, the set, the location here was actually on the Universal Studios lot.
Oh.
And they've used this lot for many films and TV shows, including Desperate Housewives.
Okay.
And I believe that they would also have these trams that would pass through every now and then with tourists, during a tour of the Universal Studios, and it kind of interrupted the shooting a little bit. Also, this film was shot during a writer's strike in 1988. Oh. So they had to, basically Joe Dante had most of the cast kind of improvise a bit to try and get around the strike protocols and stuff like that.
So
this movie was shot at an interesting time.
Very interesting.
Yeah, very
the making of this movie.
Very weird behind the scenes going on here.
Yeah.
And I also want to mention another small thing. There's a scene in Ray Peterson, that's Tom Hanks' character's, his kitchen. His son is eating breakfast, and you can see in the background a box of cereal that says Gremlins on it. Gremlins, which was a real thing, back in 1984 when Gremlins came out. So that was kind of a self-reference to the director there. It's pretty cool.
Wow, I didn't notice that.
Yeah. Huh. So this movie is very, very random, very interesting stuff going on.
Yes.
I'm a huge fan. I remember seeing it, you know, when I was very young. It was on like a Sunday afternoon on Channel 11. it's just a lot of fun. And Rylan, are you a Joe Dante enthusiast at all?
I wasn't very familiar with his work prior to yesterday. So. Okay. But, you know,
he hasn't really done a lot lately, unfortunately. His last big film was not a huge success. Mm-hmm. It was Looney Tunes Back in Action. I don't know if you saw that one.
Oh, I may have. I'm trying to remember if it was the writer or the director I saw did the Brendan Fraser Tarzan movie.
That was so Brendan Fraser was in Looney Tunes Back in Action, but you're thinking of George of the Jungle back in
George of the Jungle not Tarzan. You're right
Similar. It's basically it's the same character. It's
basically the same idea, you know.
Yeah.
That's right, George of the Jungle. Wow. But I forget, was it the director or the writer who did this George of the Jungle movie?
I am not familiar with the director. I'm not sure who did that, but that was
But I thought The actor who played the doctor looked very familiar, but I couldn't quite pinpoint yes. where I had seen him.
You're thinking of Henry Gibson, who was in a few films, a bunch of films, actually. He did Nashville in the 70s.
Okay.
And he was in, I think he was in, yeah, he was in two other Joe Dante films, Innerspace, which we may have to review in the future, do a retro review of that, because that's one of my all-time favorites as well. That and The Burbs, fantastic Joe Dante films. But Henry Gibson was also in, yeah, he was in a couple of other Joe Dante films. He had a very small part in Gremlins 2.
Okay.
as an employee who gets fired for smoking on his lunch break. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, Gremlins 2, The New Batch, 1990. That's a good one. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
Henry, I have to add that to the list.
Yeah, please do. Please do. But yeah, the doctor was played by Henry Gibson. Fantastic. The young guy, the son or the nephew, was played by Courtney Gaines, who
that's right.
He had a pretty good part in Children of the Corn.
Okay.
And he and a small part in Back to the Future. So very
he did a great job too.
Yeah,
a smaller role, but I think the neighbors, that family in particular, so quirky. They don't get as much time to shine as the rest of the cast, but when they are on screen, they do the most with it.
I know. They're all really, really funny. They look the part, and
yeah.
just so delightfully weird. You know, I don't want to give much away because I'm sure there's people listening and watching who have not seen it either. So, because I wanted to go in fresh with you, Rylan. I wanted to hear your thoughts right from the get-go. So
yeah, never seen it. I'm definitely glad that I saw it. I think it's a great performance by really everybody involved. Tom Hanks is hilarious. But honestly, one of my favorite Bruce Dern performances. Really loved Bruce Dern in this. I thought he was fantastic. So nice. Thank you for the recommendation.
Oh, of course. And there's plenty more where that came from. Trust me.
Good. I know. I've got the list coming. It keeps growing.
Yes. I also wanted to touch on something that I can't, you know, stop the end the show without mentioning the late great Jerry Goldsmith, who is one of cinema history's just most brilliant film composers. And I think his score here is among his very best because it combines like horror and comedy and thrills and excitement just beautifully. It's all mixed together in this stew of like cinematic oral bliss. And it sounds great. It's just a wonderful score. I listen to it every so often. It's one of my favorite Goldsmith scores. What did you think of the score, Rylan?
I thought it was incredible. It's funny you mention it because I noticed it pretty much from the beginning. At the start, it's very horror inspired, and then pretty much immediately it shifts from, you know, nighttime to daytime, and the cul-de-sac comes alive, and the music swells and changes. And I thought it was a brilliant job. It stays consistently great throughout the film. What I think the score helps guide the tone of this from scene to scene, because there are some scenes that are leaning a bit more into the horror elements, there are some scenes that are leaning a bit more into the comedy elements, and I think that the score does a great job of helping the audience know what we're supposed to be feeling at those times.
I know, yeah, it's funny that you mentioned the night today sequence, like in the
very beginning. Yeah.
Yeah, so first we see the Universal Studios logo, and it then kind of shifts into like this animated version of the globe, of the world, and then we get a nice, this isn't really a spoiler, but we
right
we get an awesome like Google Earth type thing going
shot
on. Yeah.
Google Earth.
Yeah, and then the score is just beautifully weird and creepy. And then zooms right into Mayfield Place, where our characters live in the cul-de-sac. And it's creepy with Hank's, you know, just kind of hearing weird stuff going on. And then we get a nice little cut to the next morning, which is like this bright and cheery,
Right.
nothing bad ever happens suburban life theme. And see, that's just the a testament to Joe Dante and his direction and how he wanted us to feel in this movie. It was like, should we feel scared? Should we feel content with our lives? I don't know. It's all over the place. It's exciting and it's weird and it's beautiful.
Yeah. No, I think it's a great score.
Yeah, it really is. Great composer. He's actually the reason why I am into film scores, I'll be honest with you.
Oh, wow.
A little side note here. 1999, I'm 14. I go to see The Mummy in theaters with the Brendan again, Brendan Fraser.
Brendan Fraser.
And Goldsmith scored The Mummy. He had a really great adventure theme for Fraser's character. And I actually went back to the theater to see the movie three more times just so I could hear that score. And ever since 1999, I've been collecting scores, and Goldsmith
Wow.
is pretty much the reason why. So,
Wow.
yeah.
That's awesome.
So, real quick, we have a couple minutes, but are you a score guy, Ryan? I forget.
Some scores, I really am big into Johnny Greenwood and Trent Reznor and the basically Radiohead and Nine Inch Nails.
Oh, cool.
Those two guys or those three guys.
Nice. Of
I really love their work. Danny Elfman, of course. Danny Elfman is great.
course.
Oh, I'm forgetting his name, but he does a lot of, if not all of the Studio Ghibli films.
Oh,
Fantastic work from him too. I want to say it's Joe. Oh gosh, I'm totally blanking on it, but brilliant, brilliant as well.
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, a good score, you know, it's great. It's just so relaxing. It's instrumental. And it kind of just evokes this strong emotion that
Yeah.
I don't think a song with lyrics can do, because you know if it's instrumental, you kind of have to kind of leave it up to your own imagination to kind of, I don't know, it just kind of, for me, a good instrumental score, it just kind of washes over me, and
Yeah.
I get sucked into another world, and it's amazing. I love it.
I would say that a song with lyrics are probably help takes me out of the world that I'm in,
Okay.
whereas a song with just no lyrics at all kind of helps me really take in the world around me. Like, for example, if I'm commuting around the city here, listening to a score really allows me to sort of make my own sort of movie, whereas sometimes that'll happen with a song with lyrics, but for the most part, that's a distraction.
Right. I get
So
you.
I agree with you.
Yeah, the subway is where I do most of my listening. So,
Yes.
as you
Yes.
know, as a yeah, being in the city. So Ryland, we've come to the point in the show where we're gonna just do plugs. So basically, I know I didn't give you any warning here, but
Oh,
like,
wow.
if there are like any projects, anything you're working on now that you're excited about, you want to mention?
Oh, interesting. Not at the moment. I am going over a friend of mine's thesis script that we'll see if that can't get made into to something soon. But that would be down the line. But for right now, just on the actor grind, as they would say.
Of course, the eternal grind of
Eternal grind.
an
Eternal grind of the spotless mind.
actor. Yes, that's the sequel. I like it.
Oh
That'll be
no.
that's a good title for your life story, I think.
Oh yeah. If I don't get sued,
Yeah.
for the taking lifting the
Right.
title. Yeah.
Nice, nice. All right, we'll
It can be
play.
parody law, right?
Yeah, we'll figure that part out.
Right.
Play it by ear. So, all right, as for me, if you want to check out new episodes of Under the Radar, you could check it out in three ways, actually. So basically, through Slam Radio on SiriusXM every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. You can check out the audio version of this podcast there. Also, on Manhattan Neighborhood Network, you can check out the podcast with video on that's every Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. And lastly, feel free to check out the Under the Radar YouTube channel by subscribing and sharing that. Share the love, guys. I appreciate it. And I appreciate Rylan Kaiser. So thank you for your time today, sir. This was amazing.
Hey, thank you for having me. It was a blast. I hope to be back soon.
Absolutely, without a doubt. All right, guys. Well, I'm Randy Younger. This has been Under the Radar, bringing movies and people together one frame at a time. We'll see you next time. Take care.